We live in a time that has been appropriately described as an era of the knowledge explosion. And in fact, rather than doubling every couple thousand years or so, or even every couple centuries as it used to be, the available knowledge in our world is expanding so rapidly that it is literally doubling every handful of years. Did I say every handful of years? Almost every handful of months. Just last night I was reading about something called quantum computing that is being worked on presently, and we have models already that are working that increase computer speed not by 100-fold, but by 100,000-fold. Knowledge explosion. My brother, who is an attorney, remarked as he was discussing a case that he was involved in that knowledge, the right kind, gives you a measure of power and control. It gives you a real advantage. And you know, he's right. Moreover, at a deeper and slightly different level, what my brother said is true on what we often describe as the spiritual plane. Now, I'd love to spend some time on this term spiritual because it's so often misunderstood and misused. I don't have the time, so just leave that as a somewhat ambiguous term. As the familiar phrase, to know him is to love him, points out, as we get to know God better, we will love him more. And in addition, if we know him well, we will experience a power and a purpose in living that we had not known before. In the passage that was read, the rabbi of old, Rav Shaul, talked about three things that will help us achieve this. And you will find that passage, a fresh translation of that, in the insert, so please follow along there. There's an outline in the insert as well if you want to utilize that. The rabbi begins with a pattern that helps us relate to each other. The people whom he's addressing here are probably a group of congregations in Ephesus, and Ephesian congregations, as you can see, had a reputation that was getting to be widely known. People were talking about their trust in Yeshua, and as the structure of this particular verse indicates down below the surface, this was a trust or a trusting that was active and progressive. Additionally, they were known for their love for all of God's people. This, too, is a rather active term as you read it below the surface. This has to do with something that's active and expressive, the kind of love that's demonstrable. That was their reputation. Now, this had captured the attention of the people around and had therefore caught the rabbi's attention as well. And so he rightly commends it. But this is not surprising if you understand some of the texts that we've talked about frequently. And one of my favorites is the one from Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 5 to 8, where God says, if you follow my guidelines and instructions, if you do what I tell you to do, the nations of the world will look at you and they will say, in effect, you know, wow. Yeah, who has a God so near to them who hears and answers prayer? Or who is such a wise people who has guidelines as wonderful as these? That's what the Ephesian congregations were pulling off. That was their reputation. So, I ask, what's your reputation? What's our reputation? When people hear of us, what do they hear about us? When people think of us, what comes to mind? Well, from this text, it ought to be an active trust in Yeshua. It ought to be a visible love for each other. Oh, and by the way, given the nature of our congregation, our community, it also ought to be an authentic commitment to Jewish values and Jewish life. And you know, as it did back then, this might just change a few lives. And the next we see in the next verse, verse 16, the response. When Rav Shaul heard about their reputation, it elicited from him a spontaneous response. And he says, as you look at the text, I haven't stopped giving thanks for you. And he goes on to say, I'm continually mentioning you, remembering you in my prayers. Now look, the rabbi didn't just say, hey, that's great. Praise the Lord. No, he kept thanking God for them, and he kept praying for them. So, says the meddling rabbi, what's our response to our brothers and sisters in Yeshua? Is it jealousy, superiority, hostility, distance, suspicion, indifference? Well, you know what it ought to be. It's right here for us. You don't stop giving thanks for those around you, and you continue to remember or mention them in your prayers. So when we think of each other here in the Or Chadash community, by the way, let me just take a step out there for a second. Do you even think of each other? Just wondering. Do you thank God for the people he's brought together here? Do you pray for them regularly? You know, it might just change your life and theirs. The rabbi of old has left us quite a pattern for relating to each other. Now, the second thing Rav Shaul talks about is a prayer that helps us relate to God, verses 17 to 21. The rabbi prayed regularly for God's people in Ephesus. Now, it would probably be helpful for us to discover just what he thought was important to pray about. And if we discover those things, those should become priorities in our lives. And so would give us an idea about what to pray for others and for ourselves. As it turns out, two things. Verse 17, a deepening encounter. So here's what Rav Shaul prayed for, what he asked God for, what he considered to be the top priority for each of us. The most important thing in our lives. Ready? Well, here it is. He says that we might get to know God better, to know him more fully. This is not simply a knowledge of facts or information, although that's part of it. But built on the Hebrew term for know, yada, it means something far deeper than that. And in fact, it implies an encounter, a living, growing, ongoing encounter with God, an intimate, progressive relationship with the Master of the Universe. In fact, this is so important that he requests that God give them special spiritual wisdom and revelation or insight to make it possible. Some translations here have the spirit of wisdom and revelation. Look, if he's praying for them to have that, that does not mean that they don't have him, namely the Spirit of God. But what is going on here, what he's implying is, he's talking about a special gifting from the Spirit of God for a special purpose. In other words, special insight. And that special insight, notice, is for the purpose of getting to know God better. Knowing God better and better. Time to meddle again. So what's your top priority in life? Does it have to do with school? Does it have to do with a nicer house, a better job, maybe a bigger paycheck, greater recognition, a more pleasant location, a nicer husband, a prettier wife or girlfriend? Oh, wait a second. Probably shouldn't have said that, should I? And what should it be then? Well, let me quote one of my favorite characters from literature. This may surprise you, but it shouldn't if you think about it. I'm quoting The Ghost of Christmas Present from Christmas Carol. He says to Scrooge, "Come, get to know me better." That's what the top priority should be. And that involves regular Bible reading and study. It involves prayer, and it involves trusting God or depending on him. And then the rabbi added another thing, or set of things, actually, that he considered most important. In fact, these were so important that he prayed consistently for them, the Ephesian believers, to have it. It has to do with a dynamic experience. This has to do with verses 18 to 21. And here he tells us he wanted us to know. Remember, know is key here. He wanted us to know three more things. Now, some translations have here that your hearts might be enlightened. Just so we don't misunderstand, heart in those days didn't have to do with emotions or intellect, but it implied the whole personality, what we might call the real you. And what he's saying or it implies that something has sunk in. And when he uses this term enlightened, as you unwrap it from the original text, the idea is being filled with light. And in this case, to transform it somewhat into our culture, it's like the light bulb going on over your head. It's one of those aha kind of moments. And he says this leads to a rich experience, or as our translation has it, a deep, full inner awareness. An awareness of three things. And what are those three things? I'm glad you asked. One, to know something about the hope to which he has called you. Which raises the question, so what's he called us to? Well, he answers that question as he writes to a different congregation. It's the one in Corinth. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, as he quotes the text from Isaiah. He says, eyes have not seen, nor have ears heard, nor has entered into the mind of the human being all that God has in store for those who love him and who are loved by him. In other words, all of that stuff that relates to the Tehillat HaBrit Chadashah for this evening, or the passage we looked at last week, all of that kind of stuff is what he's called us to. And if you remember that, even if you don't remember it, what he's called us to, as you look at that as a background, it involves stuff for the past, the present, and the future. And when we consider that, that should give us hope. Hope in another kind of sense, so to speak. Even in the difficult, hopeless situations. Look, one thing you need to know about hope, hope from a biblical context, it has nothing to do with wishful thinking. But it has everything to do with confident anticipation. Both words are important. Confident anticipation. And that hope means that there is something far better ahead. There is a beautiful purpose to all that we undergo, whether we may understand it or appreciate it or not. Which leaves us with the question, does this hope radiate even to the darkest corners of your life? Does it flood your discouragement or despair? Remember from last week, God has called us to be the pinnacle of his program, the high point of his plan. A reason, if you would have it, for the entire universe praising his greatness. That was our Tehillat HaBrit Chadash portion for tonight in the passage we studied last week. That we should resound as well as redound to the praise of his glory. If you don't catch those terms, Google them, but not now. He has great things for us and great things in store for us. Second thing we're to know is, as some translations have it, the riches of inheritance in us, or the great wealth that we are. The great wealth of the inheritance he has in his people, as our translation reads. Now notice something about this text. It's talking about his inheritance, not ours. You with me? His inheritance, not ours. That means us. We're the inheritance. Some translations use the term riches here. In other words, it's not skimpiness or just barely enough to get by. It is, as our translation reminds us, wealth. Some translations use the term glorious here. Actually, great is a very good, I was going to say great is a very great term to use here, but you understand. Not adequate or just passable or mundane, but great. God considers us his wonderful, rich inheritance. We are an inheritance of great wealth as far as he's concerned. You are somebody very special to God. Oh, by the way, so is the person sitting next to you, in front of you, behind you, and so forth. You get that part of the picture too. Third, he wants us to know his incomparably or incredibly great power for us who believe. Who believe, by the way, is important. We'll get to that in a minute. Leaving us with the question, so how great is this power? Well, As it turns out, the rabbi needed four different words for power or strength to even begin to describe it. You can see some of those in the translation. Incredibly great power, awesome might. Now you'll notice that these four words in the original Greek, we have to use five words in English to get close to, and we're still not getting close to it. But anyhow, you're getting some of the picture, I trust. And you will see in this text, verse 20, it's demonstrated in some incredibly awesome actions. The resurrection of Yeshua, the ascension of Yeshua, the seating of Yeshua in the heavenly realms, and the implications of all that as he sits there above all power and authority and so forth. It's something that's exemplified by the present position and the awesome authority of Yeshua. Some translations use the term name here. Really what that means is a title of rank. And so verse 21 describes it very well. He rules there, far above any ruler, authority, power, leader, or anything else that can be imagined, not only in this world, but in the future one as well. That pretty well summarizes it, doesn't it? By the way, the terms that he uses here are very Jewish terms. Terms that are often related to spiritual beings and the spiritual arena. And I don't mean you and I. When he talks in terms of this age and the one to come, or this world and the one to come, he's using the rabbinic concept of Olam Haba, in the world to come, Olam Hazeh, the world in which we live. If you put it all together, what this implies for Yeshua is, well, you could utilize one of the great names of God for him, El Elyon, higher than the highest. In fact, as he exited from this earth, as he ascended, which is pictured here, he said, all authority is given to me. All authority is given to me, he says, in heaven and on earth, throughout the universe. But there's some important implications for us as well. And what are they? Well, I'm glad you asked, but we'll answer that question next week because he talks about them in chapter 2. But the point for this part of the text is God has tremendous power available, ready to turn loose for us and in us. His incredibly great power, verse 19, is at work in us who trust him. This is what makes us the match for any situation he places us in or any task he calls us to. And hear me carefully on this, whether it's a positive task or a negative task, whether the end result looks positive or looks negative. It's to those, the one who experiences this? Those who believe, who trust, who depend on God, regardless of the outcome. The rabbi's prayer needs to be ours. The prayer that we have this deepening encounter with our God and this dynamic experience of his graciousness. The third thing the rabbi talks about is a plan that helps us relate to ourselves. But he begins with Yeshua's relationship to the universe. As it turns out, it's an extension and implication of verse 21. In other words, if you read verse 22, you see that Yeshua is ruler of all. He's the Lord of the universe. He's the master of everything. Another term we know quite well, Adon Olam. That would describe him. Lord of the world and Lord over time as well. And he's the one whom we love and serve. And we said that in at least one or two of the songs that we sang at the beginning of the service. And yet, he calls us his friends. Having set the stage, the rabbi then describes Yeshua's relationship to us. He uses the term head. Think about this for a second. Head of the body. But since he's the head of the body, the implication is we're incomplete without him. That makes sense. But also in some sense, think about it again, he's incomplete without us. Because after all, what is a head if there is no body? That means, once again, we are very special, very significant. No matter how mundane or humdrum our existence, no matter how useless our role seems to be, we're vital. We're important to Yeshua. Let me suggest, friends, here's an antidote for negative self-image and depression. Remember, He's the one who rules there far above any ruler, authority, power, leader, or anything else that can be imagined. And God has placed all things under His authority and installed Him as the head over all things. And He is that. And yet, without us, there's something missing. Now, friends, this should change the way we look at ourselves, the way we look at things and do things. And it should radically alter our perceptions, priorities, and performance. Without you, as far as Yeshua is concerned, there's something missing. The Ephesian congregations had a reputation that was rapidly growing, and people around marveled at their active trust in Yeshua and at their demonstrable love for all of God's people. It's a pattern we should follow, and we can, as we get to know God better. As part of this, Rav Shaul felt that there were two things absolutely vital to their well-being. And so he kept praying for them. That they should get to know God better, have a deepening encounter with God, and that they should know God's graciousness and so have a dynamic experience of three things. The hope He's called us to, all that He has in store. Being the great wealth of His inheritance. And then know about His incredibly awesome power available for us and in us. And these are the things that should be our top priorities in consistent prayer for ourselves and for those around us who are part of our community. And if these are our priorities in our prayer, they'll change our lives. Understanding God's plan and our part in it will motivate us to pursue these things for our lives. Because we realize that for Yeshua, the Master of the universe, without us, without you, something important is missing. You're very special. So keep getting to know Him better and better and experience all the wonderful things He has in store for you. But it's up to you for that to take place in your life. Take the next minute or so for the beginning of a response that hopefully continues for a long, long time to come. And do so in quiet.